Martin Rosendale, the Chief Executive Officer of the Maryland Technology Council and partner with Newport CEO Advisors. You're listening to Capital M, the Maryland Technology Council podcast focused on capital markets in the Mid-Atlantic. Our goal is to elevate the conversation about the challenges of the capital markets, identify and define those challenges, and then hopefully come up with solutions that we can then use our collective influence and do something about it. My guest today is Tien Wong. Tien is a serial entrepreneur in technology, very successful investor, but he's much, much more than that. Tien has taken it upon himself to become an activist, if you will, in the capital markets in this region. He's the founder of Big Idea Connectpreneur, which is an amazing quarterly event that attracts, I think, about 400 to 500 people at each event. The East Coast Venture Con, which is another amazing event and growing. Tien, thank you for joining me today.
Great to be here, Marty. Thank you.
My pleasure. So Tien, you're doing some amazing things, right? You've become a force to be reckoned with when it comes to raising capital and investors and connecting companies with investors, but more importantly, helping those companies be ready for the capital markets, which I think is a big issue. So could you just take a minute and explain to us how you got to this point, what brought you here, and why you feel so strongly about it?
Yeah, so I had a fairly successful CRM call center, contact center business that I sold in the early 2000s, around 03. I became a full-time angel investor. I joined a couple of angel groups. I started investing on my own and with friends. And along the way, we wound up getting involved in the technology scene. And we observed that there was a lot of enthusiasm and energy, but there really were not a lot of formal angel investment groups, nor were there sort of acceptable or accepted ways of raising capital if you're an entrepreneur, unlike what we were observing in Silicon Valley. So about 8 years ago, we decided to start this Connectpreneur program. We didn't know where it was going to go. We had 140 people meet in Tyson's Corner, and mostly founders, CEOs, and angel investors, and some VCs. We had some panels. And we had a bunch of presenting companies, and that's really the genesis of the idea. That was 38 events ago when we kind of convened this, you know, for lack of a better term, technology and investment networking event. And it was so well received by the attendees, by our sponsors, by the presenters. Presenters were getting funded. So then we added a coaching component to that over time. And a review committee component to that, and it's sort of taken on a life of its own. So, yeah, it's grown quite a bit, and I think, you know, it speaks to the need. And I really applaud what you're doing at the Tech Council, and also through this Capital M podcast. You know, in terms of getting people to join the conversation about the need for capital formation in our region, I think that the reason Connectpreneur is popular is because it is a catalyst for capital formation, which is not being provided in the space. So we didn't see the opportunity and grab it. We just basically happened to be doing it, and it just grew because of a dearth of options and opportunities for entrepreneurs who are trying to raise money.
Interesting. So when I talk to the members of the Tech Council and other businesses, I often get two consistent responses about the biggest challenges that they face. One of them is workforce, and that has to do with unemployment and whatnot. The other one is access to capital. And one of the questions that I've asked all of the guests on this podcast is, do you think that that is an issue that's unique to this region, or is access to capital just difficult and consistent around the country?
I think since 08, it's consistently difficult around the country. In our area, it's not easy either. So I think our area, as compared against, say, Kansas City, Cleveland, you know, what Steve Case considers to be the rise of the rest cities, the second tier, third tier cities, we're doing a lot better because we have an ecosystem. We have the federal government here. We have a lot of angels, a lot of cashed out investors. So relative to those smaller towns, we're strong. But relative to the bigger cities like LA, San Francisco, New York, Boston, Austin, Seattle, we're definitely lagging behind. So I would say it's a combination of factors. I think it's difficult to raise money today, more so than it was 20 years ago. And And it's also it's a nationwide issue.
Right, right. So if it's challenging across the country, what, in your mind, what does it mean or what does it take for a company to be ready for the capital markets? How do they need to prepare before they actually get out there and start raising capital?
I think it depends on the stage of the investment, whether it's sort of the very, very initial phases where you're putting your own money in, or the friends and family phase, or maybe a series seed, a seed level stage, or pre-A round or an A round. So it mm-hmm. depends. But I think the one thing they have to have in common, I believe, is to be successful, is they have to have a very clearly defined pain point that's big and very acute that they're solving. Mm-hmm. That's first thing. So it's got to be a big enough market and a severe enough market. So a lot of investors want to back companies that are making aspirin rather than vitamins. You've probably heard mm-hmm. that before. You know, a vitamin is a nice to have, an aspirin is a must have. And it's got to be a big market. And I think also team as well. Mm-hmm. So you really need, as my friend Leslie Jump from Startup Angels likes to say, you need a hacker, a hustler. What does she say? You need a hacker, a hustler, and a coder, basically. You need a designer, a uh-huh. coder, and someone who go out and make sales and make it happen.
Right, right.
Okay, it's a hipster. Hacker, hustler, hipster. So uh-huh. sometimes you have two of the three in one person. So
right.
you need a co-founder to kind of match up where your gaps are. You seldom see all three capabilities within one person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think investors want to back a team that has the vision, they're fully committed, all in, and they have confidence that they can execute.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. So what's the importance of having somebody on the team who's done it before? That's a consistent theme that's come up in some of my conversations.
Very important. I think there's a lot of wisdom that comes with someone who's done it before. That person has seen the highs and the lows, the stress, the good times and the bad times, and can keep the rest of the team under control from an emotional management standpoint, which is critically important as you're building an early stage company, is sort of managing your emotions and managing the emotions of your team. So someone who's been there before, they can kind of look back and say, hey, you know, this is to be expected, these roadblocks are to be expected, etc. Also the fact that they have the experience, they've done it. And the bankability of that person, because universally, you know, investors, angels, and VCs want to see a team of people who have, it's a mix of people, but some of whom have won championships before. And
right.
You really want to see people that have won the championships before. Yeah, that helps a lot.
So it seems to me that's consistent with one of the themes that has come up in these conversations that I've been having, and that is de-risking the endeavor, de-risking the company. And the more you can de-risk the company, the more the investors are going to be likely to invest. So the team and having some experience on that team, I would think is a factor of de-risking. What else could contribute to de-risking a venture?
Traction. You know, if you have gone out and done 200 surveys of customers, if you feel like you're getting very close to what they call product market fit, where your product or your solution is matching this market, that de-risks it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of deals where products are not exactly product market fit, so they're missing the mark by a little bit, and they wind mm-hmm. up going out of business, because that missing the mark by a little bit is just as bad as missing it by a lot.
Right.
So, you know, as an investor, you see a company that's gone out and done the research, they've talked to the customer set, they've iterated. Maybe they've got a number of half a dozen third-party pilots going, so not your brother-in-law, you mm-hmm. know, not your fraternity brother, but somebody who really is experiencing the pain point that you're setting out to solve. If you have a half a dozen to 10 of those, that really helps a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to take just a minute and remind the audience that this podcast, the Capital M Podcast, is designed to elevate this conversation. We want to get more people involved in the discussion, and to do that, if you want to learn more information, please check out the Maryland Technology Council website at mdtechcouncil.com. And if you're not a member, please consider becoming a member. So Tien, coming back to this discussion around entering the capital markets, you advise a lot of companies, right? I've seen people look up to you. They trust you. What are some of the common issues that you see and the advice that you give those companies?
number, if I had to pick, and there's many, but if I had to pick number one, it would be a sense of realism versus mm-hmm. sort of pie in the sky stuff. You know, every forecast has a hockey stick projection, right? And you want to see a hockey stick projection. You want to see the optimism. But oftentimes we see investors that are not raising enough money. I'm sorry, entrepreneurs who are not raising enough money. They say, well, I need $500,000 to get me to this milestone or two. And then you drill down and you look at the assumptions behind that thinking and you realize generally they're off by a factor of two or three because they underestimated the difficulty of making sales, of getting that traction, of hiring key people, of meeting certain development targets, or they felt that. So I think the biggest thing is that it's a little bit of over-optimism on their forecasting. And I think that I was with a bunch of entrepreneurs the other day, and I basically told them, you know, 2 to 3x what you think. Take a conservative view and double or triple, and then that's what you should focus on raising. Because a real problem for an entrepreneur is if they don't raise enough money, because then they have to spend a lot of time going out and raising more money while they should be building their business. And that's a huge, raising money is almost like a full-time job. It is a full-time job, and running a business is a full-time job. So if you're raising money for your venture, it's having two full-time jobs. So you want to get that capital in and have enough gas in the tank to make it to that next destination. I'd say that's probably the number one issue.
So in addition to the hassle that it creates to go out and have to raise more money, and I agree with you, having raised a lot of money myself, it's a full-time job. In addition to that hassle that it creates, what does it do to the company? If you underestimate the amount of capital that you need and then you don't hit a milestone and you need more capital, what does that do to the company?
It's extraordinarily stressful. I've seen this movie many dozens of times. So you have layoffs, you have people that have to take a pay cut, you have to sit down with your senior team and have a real conversation and explain, you know, you got to go 3 months without salary, 4 months without salary. People have families, they have kids. It's very, very stressful. And again, that's another compounding effect of not having enough money is you want to keep your team excited, motivated, and passionate. But if they're not putting enough food on the table because they have to take a pay cut, or if you have layoffs, which is very detrimental to morale as well, that's a sort of the human side of the cost of not having enough money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you don't have enough money, you can't finish your development on time, or you can't service your customer and they get upset, and you wind up having a cascading effect on, you know, you get into a cycle of negativity, cycle of losing, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, no. The other thing that I see is it reduces the value in the eyes of investors, and so you end up selling more of your company to raise that capital than you would have if you would have done
that. That is a brilliant point, and that is so true, because investors out there, while they are benevolent, they're also very profit focused. So when they see that you need the money, well, your valuation just dropped.
Right.
And exactly. The faster you need the money, you know, so the price of money is a function of your need for it as well as the timetable. If you need it tomorrow, you're going to be paying a lot more than if you need it, you know, in 6 to 9 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So another theme that's come up consistently in these discussions is the idea of competition for capital. Right, so we talk about the challenge in access to capital, not only in this region, but all over the world, frankly. And part of that challenge is because there's competition. And if you're in one industry, it might feel like your competition is only your industry, but really it probably isn't, right? The competition is pretty broad when it comes to raising capital.
It is. On the one hand, you read the articles in the Wall Street Journal about how much capital is sloshing around out there, right? And then you see these incredible, you know, valuations of companies out in Silicon Valley raising money. But the reality is that investors are prudent, and there's a lot of great people out there with great ideas. So there is a lot of competition for capital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like selling, you know. Even though you have a great product, there's always a few other competitors out there that you have to go up against. So I think the best advice I would give to an entrepreneur is accept the fact that, yes, there's competition for that same dollar, right? But try to understand that investor really well. Try to look at their portfolio, look at the backgrounds of the general partners and the investment committee, and you know, what's in there. Try to get in their head, talk to some of the other portfolio companies that they've invested in, and then tailor your approach and your quote-unquote sales pitch to the specific hot buttons that you perceive with each investor. I think raising money is definitely not you know, one size fits all. Every investor meeting is different. Every set of investors is different. Every general partner within a venture capital fund is different. So the more homework you do, the better.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I've had, just generally speaking, I've had venture capital investors tell me, we'll talk with 5,000 companies in a year, we'll meet with 500 companies in a year, and we'll invest in 5 to 6. That's a lot of competition.
That is. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
So it's great to have somebody with experience on the team, right? But everybody has to start somewhere. So what advice would you give a brand new CEO that hasn't raised capital before that needs to get out there and raise capital for the first time?
Surround yourself with mentors and people that know what they're doing. What you're doing at the Maryland Tech Council with VMS, Venture Mentoring Services, is amazing. I think it's a tried and true program, you know, that was, what I guess it was, seeded at MIT. Mm-hmm. You're using best practices from a proven program. You've got great mentors in the program. The guys that are running it for you are people that I love and really respect. And I think that, you know, if you're a CEO and you're a first-time person without experience, getting involved in a group like at VMS is critical, because you need to have, it's sort of like if you want to go out and become a great golfer, a great tennis player, you need a coach or coaches. And you need a fitness coach and a nutrition coach and a strategy coach. And maybe even with VMS or a group like that, or iCore program, or some of these incubators and accelerators, that may not be enough in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know, so you want to try to cultivate mentors from your past and also through your network. And just try to surround yourself with people that you can look up to, you can learn from. And that really increases your odds of success tremendously, especially if you can get a couple of role models that you really admire to be informal or even formal advisors to your company.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that the capital raising process is a sales and marketing process, right?
Yes.
You're selling pieces of your company to a group of buyers, a group of investors. What does the marketing side of that look like? How does the company identify and choose the best investors, or the ones that they really need to be meeting with, versus a shotgun approach where they just try to meet with anybody who will talk to them?
That is a super question. I love that question. And it's something that I myself, it took me a long time to learn. And I finally learned because I was told by other VCs and private equity guys, you want to start talking to these guys way before you need money, a year or two, 3 years before you need money. And the reason is, A, by going in and talking to them, you're going to get a very smart person who sees a ton of deals, vet your deal for you for free. Okay. Secondly, these guys, these investors, they love to monitor the progress of a company, and they love to observe where you're pivoting and how you're shucking and jiving in the market, and they love that. And by the time you're ready for money from them, it will have been 2, 3, 4 years that you've been sort of talking to them and sending them updates every 6 months. You're a familiar entity to them. You're not a cold call. So my advice totally is to make a list of every investor in your world and go out and try to meet with them. Now, they're probably going to say no, the odds are, but if you're persistent, you'll get a fair number of meetings, and the learning that you'll get from it is just incredible. It's a measurable value. And then you also gain a contact that potentially you can go to when you need the money, when the time is right. But a lot of the best venture capitalists that I know always take a meeting. If they see a promising idea with a promising team, even though it's several years down, they'll take the meeting.
Right.
Because they want to compete for the deal too. And they know that they have the best shot at getting the deal if you're successful, and you will have known if you've known them for a while. So it's all relationship. But you said it's selling. So the marketing has to do with going out and reaching out to these people, as well as staying in touch. So after I meet with a VC, every 3 or 6 months when I'm doing my investor updates, I'll shoot them a message. Hey, Mary, just want to keep you updated on what we're up to. Hope you're doing great. And then every 6 months, and then you're keeping your name in front of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So for somebody who doesn't know probably the entire world of investors the way you do, how do they find them? How would somebody new coming in How would they find the right investors? Are there sources for them to go to? Do they just need to find someone like you that can help point them in the right direction? What's the best way?
Yeah, I think there's multifaceted ways to do this. I mean, obviously, you can go on TechCrunch, VentureBeat, some of the quote-unquote tech rags that publish funding rounds, etc. Go on AngelList, which is angel.co. A lot of investors on there. LinkedIn is a great tool. Do searches based on angel investor, private investor, venture capitalist. Talking to centers of influence. Yeah, I mean, like people that like you or like me, or like, you know, there's several dozen people around town who work a lot with investors. Some service providers are great. So you have, you know, accountants and attorneys and bankers who play in this sort of early stage capital slash technology realm. Getting to know people there, they can help introduce you to people or identify. But it's really not that – it's hard because you have to go out and do the work, but it's not complicated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned service providers like bankers. I often hear from young early-stage companies, I don't want to use a banker because it's too expensive. When should – a company consider using an investment banker? Does it have to do with the size of the company, the size of the investment? When should it be considered?
A good investment banker will always deliver value equal to 10x what you wind up paying them. In other words, if I have to pay a $200,000 fee to an investment banker to sell my asset or my company, they should be able to get me $2 million more for the sale of my company than I would have done it if I did it myself. And the simple reason is, a good banker knows the market. They know the buyers very well. They know how to position your company to the buyers. They know strategically what the buyers want and what the hot buttons are. They do this for a living. So they'll put together a financial package and a book or a prospectus that's very professionally done. They do this. They do these, you know, every couple of weeks. So hiring a professional like an investment banker is, I think, it's critical. I mean, I've sold a few businesses. I've always hired a banker, and they've always got us a better price than we thought when we were going into the process.
Right.
Maybe we got lucky, but I know a lot of people that share that opinion. I'm talking about a good investment banker. There's a lot of quote-unquote investment bankers out there, but you do want to have somebody who's proven, who has great references, who knows your space. I think knowing your space is critical. You know, so if you're in the biohealth space, you want to have a banker that knows biohealth. Same thing for telecom or consumer or software, et cetera. Having a banker that knows those markets, those niche markets very well, can get you the best price.
Right.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you. I think this is a conversation that I have quite often with companies that I've engaged with. And the problem with that is it's hard to measure that 10x return. Right? Because you don't know what the deal would have been if you didn't have the banker. And so it's hard to prove that. But in my experience, at least the bankers that I've worked with, and you're right, it has to be a good banker, someone that you're comfortable with, someone that knows your markets. But I've had the same experience. And my advice is to get affiliated with a banker early on. So anyway, I appreciate that. So we're coming up to the end of our time here, Tien. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to touch on?
You know, we talked about raising money is a full-time job. Raising money is a sales process. But just know that raising money is really, really hard. Like, just like a venture capitalist that you mentioned looks at 5,000 deals to take 500 meetings to do 5 deals, you have to talk to hundreds of venture capitalists or hundreds of angels in order to get a handful of angels to step up. And it's a numbers game. I mean, you have to put heavy effort into every meeting because you don't know where the meeting's going to go. But I've raised money a lot from sort of high net worth and family offices, and the meeting that you don't expect much from sometimes turns into a check being written. And sometimes you think you got a slam dunk meeting and they stonewall you. So if you knew that ahead of time, you could be judicious about how you spend your time. But you just have to put the same effort into every single meeting. And the worst that comes out of a meeting is you learn something and you made another contact. So I do believe your network is your net worth. And if you start building your network now over the course of 5, 10, even 20 years in a career, that network becomes gold to you. And you know, the trust that's been developed and the consistency that you've shown to your network, that pays big dividends down the road. But I know that sounds good now, but if you're out there looking for money, I would just say don't get discouraged. Just know that it's a hard process. It's extremely emotionally demanding, not just intellectually and physically, but emotionally. And you just have to try to maintain positivity throughout. That's really the tough part. It's so easy to give up. It's so easy to go get down. But I think it's critical that you have to stay up for your team, but also for the investors. If the mm-hmm. investors smell weakness or they smell that you're hurting, it's going to, you know, really lessen your chances of getting them interested.
Right, right. It's tough to hear no 9 out of 10 times, but when you hear yes, it feels really good, right?
Well, every no is one step closer to a yes. So if you hear 10 no's, that's good, because the mm-hmm. next one could be a yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. So last question, Tien. What's next for Big Idea Connectpreneur? What's next for TN? Where are you taking all of this? Like I said, you really have become a force to be reckoned with in this region as far as connecting capital with ventures. What's next?
Yeah, well, with respect to our events business, I think we're very happy where we're at with 6 Connectpreneurs a year, and we do the East Coast Venture Con with you guys, and I'm mm-hmm. very grateful for the partnership we have with Maryland Tech Council and look forward to building that up over the next few years. But for Connectpreneur right now, we've been offered to go to Kansas City and LA, New York, New Orleans, Charleston. And, you know, we're not in the events business per se. I feel like we're better off staying in D.C., Maryland, Virginia. That's the market we know. That's the market people know us at.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we might do some things like maybe some newsletters. You know, we do have a Connectpreneur investor network of our top angels that we meet every so often, and we review the best deals that are presented at Connectpreneur. But we don't really have any plan. It's kind of grown organically, and I think it'll probably continue growing organically. We're rolling out something called Connect Tales.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically licensed our name and partnering with a gentleman in D.C. named Hank Dearden, who has done this for a living. So we're going to do like quarterly cocktail parties mm-hmm. for our community. So that's something that's more for fun. Now, you don't make money right. doing that, and it's more for fun and staying in touch with the community. And then as far as my own business activities, we're looking at acquiring another company in the contact center space.
Great.
So that's my day job.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, focused on that. I have a team of 6 people that I used to work with that we've been looking for a platform company, and hopefully in the next year we'll have something. But
fantastic.
It's a grind too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Your day job. Somehow I suspect you never sleep. Yeah.
Well, so. I meditate a lot. You have to meditate. That's a good thing. Yeah.
That's right. Well, thank you. This is Martin Rosendale with the Maryland Technology Council, and this is Capital M. I've been talking with Tien Wong. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you would like more information, you can go to mdtechcouncil.com. Our goal, again, is to elevate the conversation, get more people involved, identify and define the challenges, and then bring solutions forward, then utilize our collective influence to make a difference. Thank you very much.